Imagine, a podcast series by Imagine Theatre.
Hello again, how are you? Do you know, I can't believe we're 3 months into the year already, and this is episode 75 with me, Martin Ballard, and a look at the role of the pantomime director.
For more information, go to their website at www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.
In the last episode, I was joined by two of the most influential people in British theatre. CEO of Trafalgar Entertainment, Dame Rosemary Squire, and CEO/COO of Trafalgar Theatres, Helen Enright. That and all of the other previous 74 episodes are still available, so if you missed any of them, all you have to do is go to where you normally get your podcast from, and while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the series so you don't miss out in the future. There are many more episodes to come from Imagine Theatre, one of the UK's biggest producers of pantomime and children's theatre. Well, this time, I'm delighted to say that I've been joined by Dr. Robert Marsden and actress and director Mary Bryan to look in more detail at the role of the pantomime director. So, first of all, how are you both?
Fine, thank you.
Very well. Thanks, Martin.
Now, of course, Rob, we've spoken before, so anybody who's heard any of the previous episodes will know a bit about your background, although that is changing, and we'll talk about that in a moment's time. But, Mary, what about you? What about your background? Some people might know you've directed the panto in recent years for Imagine in Kirkcaldy, but I think predominantly you started as an actress with quite a few West End credits.
Yeah, that's correct. So my background's the West End, musical theatre, and started off training as a ballet dancer. Ultimately, that's what I wanted to be when I was young, and went to the Dance School Scotland up in Glasgow, and then followed the path of musical theatre after that, went to Arts Educational and came out of that, and was very fortunate to have a very successful career in performing in lots of the big shows.
Shows like Scrooge and South Pacific, A Chorus Line, Chitty, of course. As a performer predominantly, but did you at any stage move into more choreography and direction?
Yes, yeah, so I've always done quite a lot of choreography. Even when I was at college, I helped, did a lot of assisting with the teachers there. And as soon as I left, I went back into the colleges, both at Mountview and at ArtsEd, to teach and to choreograph. Then I took over up at Newcastle College as head of musical theatre, which kind of were my first steps into directing, really. So I took on quite a big role there, directed a couple of their productions and choreographed them there. So once I went back into the performing world, I was quite keen to start taking on a bit of a directing or a resident director's role within some of the shows that I've done.
And what about your experience with regards to pantomime, both as a performer, choreographer and director?
So I was lucky enough to start my pantomime journey, if you like, up at Perthwick Theatre in Scotland, which is a lovely theatre, and it's got a very family-friendly, homely feel to it, to their pantomimes. And it was a lovely introduction to the start of pantomime journey for me, and was able to be the assistant choreographer on that, and did that 2 years in a row. And after that, I was at Potter's Bar at the Williots Theatre, which was just after my stint on Chitty Bang Bang. And then I spoke to my agent about speaking to Steve Bowden at Imagine and getting involved there, which I was very, very fortunate to be able to go and work alongside Steve at Reading and start my journey directing pantomime, which has just been fantastic.
And now you're a big part of the Imagine family, which is a lovely thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I love it very much. I've been doing it now for quite a few years. I first did my first one on my own after assisting Steve in 2012. I then went over to Gravesend and did my first one directing myself. And that was Beauty and the Beast in 2013. And I've done one every year since then.
Well, the other interesting thing about you is we've talked on this podcast so many times about the importance of theatre for children, whether that be their first performances on stage, coming up for the song sheet, or just sitting in the audience and getting that first immersive experience of theatre. So tell us a bit about Showstopper UK.
This is my business that I started up when I became a mother. So where I am, the fact that my family is up in Scotland, it made childcare situation quite tricky. And I decided that actually to go back into going on tour or into the West End, but the show wasn't quite correct for me at this time. So I started Showstopper UK, which is baby musical theatre sensory classes with a musical theatre twist. And and it's great because it really immerses the children and the babies right from a very early age into quite emotive and very sort of serious music, as well as the nursery rhyme element, which they so enjoy, it also gives them more complex music, which is brilliant for their cognitive behaviour and their stimulus for their brains, and just getting them to love it from a very young age, which I'm quite very passionate about.
I, for one, am probably one of many adults who quite fancy that idea as well, to be honest.
It is. It's lots of fun for the parents and the carers as well as the children. So actually it gives a little bit of a different angle. So it really can help with mental health for the parents as well, and the carers, to get out and to do something that they enjoy and sing along to the musical theatre songs. So it's really lovely for everybody, and I really enjoy it.
Now, Rob, we've spoken about your background in detail before. It's changing slightly. In fact, you're going to be, you know, spending a lot more of your time as a director than perhaps you have for the last decade or so. Tell us, first of all, a little bit about how you became a director in the first place.
I was really lucky to be able to assist, like we were just talking about there, to be assisting in the late 1990s in the repertory companies across the United Kingdom, which was a really formative experience, assisting Sir Alan Ayckbourn, assisting at the New Vic Theatre. I was setting up my own theatre company. I loved the acting process. I knew very early on I wasn't going to be an actor, but I really enjoyed rehearsal room processes and engaging in that process through a directorial lens. So I was setting up my own theatre company, assisting, and then became an associate director in various productions and companies, and then took on much more directorial roles. And over the last 18 years, I've been at Staffordshire University, and I've always been able to maintain my freelance directing career. I've been extremely fortunate that the university have allowed me to continue to direct two or three times a year and let me out in the summer and at Christmas, obviously, for Imagine Theatre since 2007, directing for them. So I got in that wonderful learning on the rehearsal room floor, assisting some wonderful directors.
And now you are taking a leap of faith and really concentrating your entire career on directing. Is that right?
I am. I'm going to be carrying on doing a little bit of consultancy work in higher education, and also doing much more work in terms of freelance directing and also my writing. I've also done a lot of adaptation in the past as well. So I'm going to continue that balance. And I'm at that little stage of my life, I'm reaching a certain age, and I'm thinking, actually, I need to return more to my roots. So rebalancing, still be working in higher education as a consultant, but also doing much more freelance work moving forward. So yeah, a big leap of faith is in 2024.
Well, we wish you all the very best with that. You won't need the luck, but best wishes with that. Hope it goes well for you. With your academic hat on, how much do you know about the history of the director? Because I think it's well documented, and that sort of transition from the former actor manager in panto terms, it's not quite so easy to quantify. And I think, you know, people like John Rich with the Harlequinade, and maybe Augustus Harris a little bit later on, you know, in this country, are key figures. But everybody talks about producers and impresarios more with pantomime, don't they?
Absolutely. And there's always been directing roles. Students are always surprised when you say that actually the role of the director as we know it has only been in place for the last 200 years out of, say, 2,000 years of theatre history. But there's always been someone who's had to marshal everything together. That might have been the priest, or the spiritual leader in very early days. It might have been the kind of a chorus master in religious ceremonies. Obviously, the playwright took on directorial roles in Elizabethan and Jacobean and Restoration eras, but the actors self-directed a lot of the time. There were only two, three, four rehearsals during those periods. But interestingly, yeah, in that period when you're talking about Rich and Harris, kind of the 1800s onwards, you had then the growth across, particularly in Europe, of this role of the director. The Duke of Saxe-Meiningen in the 1800s in Germany was directing a group of ensemble players and touring, creating characters, giving the supernumerary parts, backstories and deep characterizations. You had the rise of technology in theatre. So someone had to really start to bring all of that work together in some way with the spectacle, lighting, sound, other effects. Someone had to really start to bring all of that together with the work of the actor. And also the rise of naturalistic plays. So Stanislavski, famously in Russia, having to really think about working with actors to develop characterizations, that psychological realism. So in that 1800s, you've got, there's a real pivot, there's a real tipping point, and the role of the director emerged through the rise of technology, the different types of plays that needed to be produced and created, and so on. Now, you mentioned Augustus Harris, so you had the rise of the actor-manager. They would run theatres. So Augustus Harris with Drury Lane in London, of course, they would also direct. They were often actors, but they would often direct and produce in that way. And I've got a little thing here that they used to rehearse for up to 3 months at times because the Christmas pantomime has always been so important for the theatre. So there's lots of evidence in the archives around 3 month rehearsals going all night. They used to have scenic rehearsals, what we now call a technical rehearsal, scenic rehearsals without the actors, but they would be overnight. Thank goodness working times and regs have got a bit better since then, but there were long, long days and nights. And Augustus Harris, here we go, in 1886 here. This is from a very old book by A.E. Wilson, but talks about in Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, filling the stage with 300 or 400 people representing the invasion of the robber's den. Each of the 40 thieves was accompanied by a retinue of 10 or 12 people. So you've got these, not only have you got the spectacles, you've got huge numbers. There's 300 or 400 people. Another piece of evidence suggests up to 500, 600 people in one of Harris's productions. So you're that director figure to bring everything together, to balance the spectacle with the work on stage and all of the scenic artistry and all of the new technologies that were going on at the time. The role of the actor manager in those London theatre companies was absolutely key in terms of the director figure in pantomime.
And Mary, there is some still aspect of the actor manager with some pantos. Ian Lachlan, for instance, will play Dame and direct at Coventry's Belgrade Theatre. And I guess for you, when you were transforming, if you like, from performer to director, you may have actually done some directing and been in a show, or choreographed and been in a show. So some of those elements are still there.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that it's a very normal process to go through, to go from one to the other, but also to have that crossover. It's a really good insight as well, I think, to be doing and directing at the same time, or doing and choreographing, because you can really sort of feel what the actor or what the dancer feels at the same time. But it is nice to then be on the other side and being able to take complete charge and just see it for what it is, rather than trying to imagine what it looks like from the front, if you know what I mean. If you're in it and trying to direct it, it can be very tricky, because you're trying to imagine what it looks like from the front rather than actually just being able to sit back and see it and view it and do it that way.
Yeah, especially for those tech rehearsals, that's always an issue. And it's always good to have a second pair of eyes in the auditorium, isn't it? But there are different styles. And a lot of people who don't have any involvement in theatre will probably think the director's role is to make it look good, you know, to organise the blocking and to make sure the actors know their lines. There's a whole technical side to it as well. But what's your approach, Mary? How do you approach directing a panto?
Well, I approach directing a panto very much like I would approach directing a play or a musical. I'm very careful about the story. I think that especially because it's the children we spoke about, when children go to see it, it's their first chance to see something in the theatre. It could be their first hook, their first time going, oh yeah, this is amazing. And what really drives the show is the story. So I tend to approach it at the beginning, when we're in the rehearsal room, from a very similar place, so that we talk about the characters and how the characters are going to display on the stage, so that you've really got all those different types of characters. The difference, obviously, in pantomime being that they are the extremes of each character. So you've got a very big baddie and a very big comic and a very big romantic, but must maintain the story. So yeah, so that's the way that I look at it. And then obviously once you get into the technical side of it and we go into the technical rehearsal, there is a switch. And with pantomime, it is so fast paced. There's a lot happening. And you do have to take on a little bit of everything and see the lights for what they are and try and make sure that the set's moving where it should, as well as still maintaining the real idea of the heart of the story of that fairy tale that's at the base of it all.
Rob, we have to remember that pantomime, any theatre for that matter, is multi-sensory. It's not just what it looks like, it's what it sounds like and so on. But what about the traditional elements that we discuss on a regular basis? How aware of you when you're directing a panto that all of those are still there and the signposting works?
As Mary was saying, story's key. And then when you bring in all of those anarchic elements, those traditional elements, they have to hang, well, I always call it like the washing line of the story, and then you hang all of those other elements off it. But the story is your pulse and your drive all the way through. I'm very keen as a director to work within audiences' expectations, particularly if you've been in a venue for a long period of time and you've built something up. There's an expectation, and you can obviously bring something new, but there's an expectation that there'll be a messy slosh, for example. So that's key for me as a director. As Mary was just talking about, the role of the director is to be the eye of the audience all the way through that rehearsal room process, through all levels. So yeah, you're absolutely right in terms of that wider sensory perception. And I've always hooked on kind of the David Woods notion of suddenlies, that there has to be a lot of suddenlies all the time to keep young people involved. But we know that pantomime is for the family as well. So I'm trying to look at it through the lens of being a parent, being a grandparent, being a young kid as well. And I always love it in rehearsals when the junior chorus watch the run through or stagger through for the first time, and I watch it through their eyes. How are they responding to what we're doing in the room? What I find funny at 2 o'clock in the afternoon might not be what they find funny when they watch it and they come in. So it's and same thing as well on those first few performances. You're watching, you're in the auditorium, you're sensing it. And I think being on the outside of that's really key. And for me as well as a director, I think about how I structure the rehearsal room slightly differently. So with a play, I'm doing it in chronological order, because it's often, particularly if it's a psychologically realistic piece, and you want to get a sense that A leads to B leads to C, and there's knock-on effects. But actually, in the first day, we might do a major routine. I might do a very complicated bit of physical business, because it's kind of sits outside of the order of the story journey, as it were. But actually, I need that to get the actors to embody that and to really feel that they're at ease with that. So we'll do all of those complicated either routines, either dance routines or physical routines early. And we might do 12 days in the first few days. We'll do the slosh in the first few days, for example, so that we're not leaving that until when we get to that in the script, because then the actor's got longer to embody it. So that understanding of what an actor needs in a short rehearsal period is also really key as a director when you're structuring.
Are you aware of a sort of educational element to this, certainly in the first few days of rehearsals? Because there will be some people in the show, whether they're on ensemble or junior ensemble, who have never done pantomime before. But initially, when you get your cast together, do you talk through the responsibility of a comedy role as opposed to a story-driven role and so on?
I think it depends on the cast that I've been given, Martin. Yes, but that does sometimes have to happen. Like you said, it is an education for some people because they haven't done pantomime before. They've maybe come to it with a wealth of experience as an actor or a performer, but haven't actually stepped inside the role of a dame before, for example, or the role of a Prince Charming. And because it is that much bigger and larger than life than, say, your standard romantic lead in a musical theatre show or stand-up comedian or something like that, it is much larger. And as Rob was saying, you know, it has those standout routines as well to take on that they may have never come across before. What's a slosh? This is something that's completely new to them. So sometimes it is important to sit down with them and say, okay, so this is where we're going to go with this. This is how to approach it. But then after that, yeah, you just, as you're going through that week's first initial rehearsal process, you can find people's natural rhythms and then enhance on them. Especially with things like the dame or, you know, your other comics in the show, it's really important to let them try and find their own natural rhythm and then work with that, because you'll get a much better and more real response and get a much better response from the audience as well if they're feeling that the person is very comfortable within the role that they're in. So
I think as well, when you do the slosh for the first time, I think maybe you should spend at least as much time on skincare as you do on the actual routine, because we all know what it can do to you, especially if it gets in your eyes. In terms of the other aspects of the role, Mary, because as a performer, you will be aware of part of the director's role when you first start directing shows. But of course, it's a collaborative role in so many ways, with choreographers, with the actors, of course, but all the various technical departments as well. How was that for you when you made that change?
I think, yeah, it was a big learning curve for me taking on something as big as pantomime from a technical point of view, because you really do to know a bit about everything, you know, understanding the sound, understanding the lighting, all of those sorts of things. And I really thrived on that. It was very exciting to take on that part of it. And I enjoyed that part of the journey. But it is a slightly different collaborative experience doing pantomime to doing other shows where everybody really does have a role. You know, it's a bit more sort of formulaic. With pantomime, it's a little bit more everybody in for everything, and you've all got to get on with it and, you know, make the best that you can with everything.
Rob, from the director's point of view, those early meetings with the technical team and the other creatives are really important, because day one of rehearsal, you've got to hit the road running, haven't you?
They're absolutely crucial. So conversations are happening now about Christmas, setting those frames up, choosing the music, briefing, working with a new creative in that way. I've been working with a new lighting designer over the last couple of years, but making sure you're briefing in the right way so that they're able to do the plotting. I'm not a lighting designer, but I understand light. I'm not a choreographer, but I understand movement and dance. And so you're trusting that everybody is able to take their bit of the pie and work with it, and you're trusting their creative judgment and their creative processes. I always say that often in musical theatre and in pantomime, there are several directors in the room. There's the choreographer, the musical director, and the director. But you've got kind of a leader amongst equals. As myself as a director, I always kind of say, well, the buck stops here. I'll make those decisions. I'll make those early calls months and months ahead of getting in the rehearsal room, because then you can use all of the time available in a really, really productive way, that you're not wasting time, that you've had those conversations, you've had those pre-production meetings. There should be very few surprises. We know we've worked out months in advance what's being underscored live, what's coming from the tracks, and working with the arrangers and so on. It's this huge jigsaw that starts round about now for the following season. And my conversations with head office are really key to kind of prime me in terms of expectations as well. As a freelance director, I'm working for a producer, so I have to be really cognizant of working to a producer's brief and then working within that, and then I brief and work and lead the teams and so on. So yeah, it's a huge collaborative effort. The buck does stop with the director, but it's making sure that everyone feels that they can take full ownership and responsibility for it. And if, for example, there is something that I'm not quite as keen on, then it's my fault in a way. I haven't probably briefed that person in that way to do something in a certain way. So the briefing's really key, and then we can all work within that frame really creatively.
Yeah, I think as well, Mary, that time management is really important for that 2-week rehearsal period, isn't it? Because you may have the actors in the rehearsal room and choreographer wants to take them away to do something, and the musical director needs to run through the songs, wardrobe might even want to do some costume fittings. You've got to be on it with time management as well, haven't you?
Absolutely. And as Rob was saying, that, you know, that was well put, you know, you're putting it, briefing everybody before you go into the room, and then everybody being able to sort of carry on with their slice of the pie. And that's the same, it carries on into the rehearsal. I usually go in with a rough timetable, if you like, a schedule that I would like to achieve and work to, and then sit down and brief my musical director, my wardrobe, and my choreographer, and we can sit down together along with the company manager and say, okay, so where are we at? Is this going to work? Is that achievable? Is there any, you know, so for example, Rob mentioned earlier as well about getting those big numbers down first of all. So, you know, I'll speak to the choreographer and say, what time do you need for the finale, for example? Mm-hmm. That's usually one of the big ones that involves all of them. And some of the actors won't be as used to taking on big choreographic numbers as others. So you want to make sure that that's in their body at the very beginning of the rehearsal period. So you sit down with everybody and make sure that the schedule is going to work. And we always have a debrief at the end of the day, and then again in the morning, to just make sure that I, as a director, have made sure that everybody else's needs are covered as well, because that's really important. And that's how you can make the best of the time. And then as soon as you've got a little bit of space, you can do a break. You know, if we're fortunate enough, which I have been in some of the venues, to have a breakout space, I can say, okay, can somebody go next door with the choreographer and go and do that section, or go next door with the musical director and do the song, and I'll work with this person on this scene. So you can multitask and get quite a few different things done during those times in the rehearsal room. That's really important. Being very organised, I think, is key.
Mary, what do you love about directing, and panto for that matter?
It's the fun that you see when you go in and watch the audience on those first few performances after putting the whole thing together. I mean, there's nothing really more rewarding than watching the show from out front. You feel the vibes from the cast on stage. They're having a great time. You're watching the audience. You're seeing kids clapping. You're seeing kids booing. Little tiny little babies going, oh, look at that. Or, you know, those little moments that you catch from the audience. I mean, that's really just something that's phenomenal. And it's really rewarding. From a point of view of being in the rehearsal space, I love that first week, getting to know your actors, getting to know your cast. And I've been very, very fortunate to have worked with some fantastic musical directors and choreographers as well, which is always good fun. You end up with a really lovely rapport, and it could just be so much fun. You know, it's fast paced, it's hard work, it's all in for those first few hours and that first week, and then into tech week it's busy, but it's good, it's fun. You know, it's really exciting.
What about you, Rob? What do you love about it?
I'm the same, really, in terms of seeing that all come together. And I know I've said this on another podcast, but for the audiences, I always think you kind of go in as individuals and come out as one, that you all share that amazing, joyous, anarchic, topsy-turvy world, end up, you know, and go out on a high with that amazing finale number. So for me, it's a real unifier. That's what I love deep, essentially, about Panto.
And of course, you're both back directing again this year. Mary, I'm assuming you're back in Kirkcaldy.
I've not spoken with Steve yet, but I've got a meeting with him next week, so I'm looking forward to having a talk with him. But I know that we're all keen for it to be back up in Kirkcaldy, because I do enjoy being up in the venue. I've made some lovely connections up there, and great rapport with quite a few of the in-house staff as well, so it's quite nice. It feels like a home from home for me.
And Halifax for you again, Rob, is it?
I believe so, all bar the shout. I believe it's Peter Pan in Halifax this year. And like Mary was saying, in relation to just building up a working relationship, a brilliant working relationship with the in-house teams, it's key when you're putting on these large-scale commercial pantos.
Well, listen, it's been fascinating chatting to you both, and a real insight for those people not involved in the industry. So Rob and Mary, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And before we finish, another of your questions, and this one is a really interesting one, and it's basically asking, what sort of effect on pantomime production has the economic situation over the past 4 or 5 years had? To answer that question, here's Imagine's joint CEO, Sarah Bowden.
Well, that's a bit of a tricky one to answer, if I'm honest, because the economic situation has ebbed and flowed a lot. Obviously, we had a really successful panto season across the country in 2019. Then we lost the whole of the 2020 panto season, which I still can't believe happened, but it did. 2021 was affected by COVID closures during its season. Scotland and Wales closing on the 24th of December, England struggling through but losing some performances due to illness and people having to be off and all the COVID regulations. So that was bound to upset the apple cart a bit. 2022 saw a great bounce back for Panto. We'd hoped that people would want to come back to see the shows, and they did. And in 2023, we were optimistic, and indeed rightly so, that we ended up with a really good season. So all in all, pretty positive. But of course, this is all across the backdrop of a cost of living crisis. Very conscious that we've had to keep ticket prices affordable. Very conscious that we've had to make the productions as accessible as they possibly can be. But in the light of the fact that over the last 2 years, both years have seen a 10% rise in minimum wage. So what do you do? Do you put tickets up by 10% but make them unaffordable to keep them in line with minimum wage rises? Or do you not? That's been the huge dilemma that the panto producing fraternity have faced. What do we do with ticket prices? Ongoing issues, I guess, but that's the nature of economic situations. They ebb and flow. So it's affected it quite a lot, but nothing that we can't deal with. It's panto land after all, and everything's magic, right?
It certainly is. Sarah, thank you so much. And I'm afraid that's it for now. Don't forget to send any questions you might have about Imagine Theatre or pantomime in general using the Get in Touch section of the website at imaginetheatre.co.uk. In the meantime, make sure you subscribe through your favourite podcast app, and don't forget to join me, Martin Ballard, next time for episode 76, when I'll be taking you behind the scenes once again at Imagine Headquarters.
Thank you for listening to the latest edition of Just Imagine, the podcast series from Imagine Theatre. And you can find out more by going to www.imaginetheatre.co.uk.